A ribbon of light crosses a black screen. The name Relight Films appears.
I have dedicated my life, my entire life, since being a boy to now, to being an artist. And to do so in a way that was, to me, self-righteous. I want the world to be the way that I envision it. And that means that the world is full of conflicts, and so am I. I'm in conflict with everything out there that pisses me off, that upsets me, that's, you know, that's not just, that's not right.
A speedy trial in front of a jury of peers. It's one of our constitutional rights. But there are those who think the Sixth Amendment ought to be amended to include trial by mainframe.
When jurors found O.J. Simpson not guilty, more than a difference of opinion separated them from New York computer scientist Joseph Bonusso.
We found O.J. guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. He was guilty of murder.
As designed, the Solomon Project at the New York University Law School is supposed to take the jury out of jurisprudence, casting all trials to the impartiality of artificial intelligence. Testimony, evidence, and precedents were entered into the computer, and a complicated formula using fuzzy logic helped render a verdict.
A jury is a manipulated group of puppets.
Charlie Todd, founder Improv Everywhere.
As a prankster, I'm always have my guard up in general, especially when I hear Joey's name.
You run a brothel for dogs.
A brothel for dogs.
How would you feel if you had covered Joey Skaggs' cat house for dogs?
Would you welcome the inventor of the fish tank condo, Joey Skaggs?
Joey Skaggs. He's fooled every major American network with his elaborate hoaxes.
Print this guy, Mike. I want to make sure we never see him again under any other name.
How do we even know that you are Joey Skaggs? How do we even know what you're saying about these media outlets is true?
Any journalist who falls for a Joey Skaggs prank is, it's their own fault.
He thinks that cockroaches are very important to all of us.
A cockroach hormone pill to cure everything.
Cockroach cure. Now, would you read that article?
It's because they didn't look closely. They didn't fact check. They didn't make that call to verify something.
My parents were missionaries in Kenya.
Would you ever believe all the things you see on television? Hoaxes performed before your very eyes.
Don't you feel bad when you do it?
I feel very good.
I was pissed off at Joey for a period of time, but I decided to forgive him because Joey does what I really love, and that is he makes you laugh, and when he makes you laugh, he makes you think.
Well, about a month ago, we told you about a man who came up with a way to render verdicts without all the arguing in the jury room, but he didn't say anything about being embarrassed, which is what CNN is right now.
We've learned his invention was all a big hoax, and we fell for it.
Wow, that thing on TV news that we were all talking about wasn't true.
I remember being kind of scared, like, oh my God, we've been found out. And Joey's like, no, this is all part of it. This is all part of it. Because they have to find out. That's the other part.
Art of the prank. Joey sits at home looking at a picture of a drone carrying missiles under its wings.
I can't put that on the back of a tricycle. There's just no way. So I'm going to stick with the missile. The missile it is.
Caption, Kentucky. Joey sits behind the wheel of a van. He has shoulder-length grey hair, a long beard, and wears wire-framed round glasses. Next, he stops to load an adult's tricycle into the back of the van. Later, the tricycle is in a workshop.
First, I'd get the stand in, making sure that it was supported. And then I would, like you said, that pipe with a flange.
Sparks fly from an angle grinder as alterations are made to the rear of the tricycle.
We have Iran, you know, still playing games. North Korea is still playing games. You have surveillance drones. You have Russia being very upset with what's going on with NATO, with moving missiles to their borders. There's so many issues that this relates to, and it's,
you know what,
and
though,
it's satire. I mean, it's a mobile rocket launcher.
The thing is, you know, something may just, in the next six
something
weeks,
will pop
happen.
Up. Yeah.
And it's just going to be yeah. ready.
He buys a toy Nerf gun and assembles it back at home.
what color do we paint it? We have the North Korean flag on it, the Iranian flag on it.
My head and a rope. I can be an Arab.
Joey rides the tricycle around the yard with a red-tipped homemade missile attached at the back and the Nerf gun on the handlebars.
I like to mix it up. It doesn't have to always be a hoax. It can be a direct theatrical piece, which is a political statement or a confrontation.
I just love the fact that here I am in the middle of rural America with people who, you know, you wonder whether they would agree with your political stance or not. But they're willing to do it. The rocket's the rocket. That'll be a great visual pedaling down the streets of New York or wherever.
Two horses pull a plow through a field. In his secluded country home, Joey's on the phone.
John. Well, you're not going to believe this. I just came back with Judy from seeing Sacha Baron Cohen's film, The Dictator. And, so he's got a missile in it, you know, and he's paying homage to North Korea, and, you know, he's an Arab building a missile, you know, and oh, it's like, oh, fuck, man, you know. But he didn't have it on the back of a tricycle, so we'll stick with the rocket, and we'll just have the mobile rocket launcher, and that's it. And I just have to, you know, I may not dress up like an Arab, as I thought I might, or as a North Korean, as I thought I might. Maybe I should go as Uncle Sam. I don't know.
After his call, Joey speaks to the camera.
It's not the same thing, but, you know, he's got it covered, kind of. Rethink this one.
Yeah.
You gotta be first. Not always easy.
Joey uses a ride-on mower to cut the grass in the extensive grounds around the chalet-style home. Later, he walks his border collies.
Look, life throws you a lot of curveballs. You have to be prepared for it. You have to go with the flow. This, you know, you don't have a lot of choices. And what happened with me was my father had dementia. He was bedridden for 9 years. My mother was incapable of living alone and taking care of herself. I said that, you know, when she needed me, I would be here full time, and she needed me. So I had to give up Hawaii and New York.
Dorothy Skaggs, Joey's mother.
Right after my husband died, he came from Hawaii, and it was a big change for him. And I'm not going to say what he calls this place, but it's not been his greatest move because he doesn't have access to the things that he's used to.
It's a tricycle, it's a three-wheeler, and on the back of the three-wheeler is a platform that's going to hold the confessional booth.
1992, Kauai, Hawaii. They construct a small wooden confessional booth.
I've got some crucifixes.
New York City. The modular booth is mounted on the back of a tricycle. Joey, dressed as a priest, then rides it around the city streets.
From Fox 5, this is Election 92.
Good evening, I'm Jack Cafferty of Madison Square Garden. Cora Ann will join us shortly from the studio. Now, if anyone at the convention's feeling guilty about something they may have done, they don't have to go far to confess their sins. A man who calls himself Father William has mounted a portable confessional booth on his bicycle.
For delegates who feel they may have overindulged a bit, a Catholic priest has set up a mobile confessional outside Madison Square Garden.
But a California priest has the answer for Catholics who don't have time to confess. He calls it Portafess.
Father Joseph, who is schlepping a Portafess portable confession booth around by bike.
A series of photographs and newspaper clippings show Joey riding the Portafess around the city, with some papers giving it front page coverage.
Well, I didn't start out as a prankster. I was a child artist. I had a passion for art. I always drew, I painted, I sculpted. I just knew that
I wanted to be an artist. That was my dream.
Most children, they don't obey their parents. They don't want to accept rules and regulations and come in at a certain time. He was just a normal child who just didn't want to do what Mama and Papa said.
My parents moved to a little area on the Brooklyn-Queens borderline called Laurel Hill by Newtown Creek, a real industrial slum area. And there's Calvary Cemetery there, the Kosciuszko Bridge, and off in the distance was Manhattan.
A view through a chain-link fence of the Manhattan skyline.
I was a young artist. I knew what I wanted to be, and I wanted to be in Manhattan.
A clip features the Brooklyn Bridge crossing the East River into Manhattan, then an aerial view showing speeded-up footage of traffic and pedestrians on the busy city streets.
It was a junior high school art teacher that told me about the High School of Art and Design. And I was really fortunate enough to be accepted into this extraordinary high school. And it was all young artists, and the teachers were artists. And it was inspirational.
My husband never agreed. Never.
But what did your son do? He's a fine artist. What the fuck is a fine artist?
And I said, well, as far as I'm concerned, so be it. It's his life. And if he says it's what he wanted to do, that's fine with me.
You have a dream, a passion, I'm going to be an artist, I'll just do all my work and then I'll be discovered. I'll just paint, someone's going to, oh, genius! But it doesn't always work out that way for most people. You're forced to wait until you are accepted into a gallery and then have a show and then hope for a review. There was no immediacy involved, and I wanted the immediacy. I like things now. I said, fuck that. I'm going to do it in the streets, I'm going to do it my way.
A black and white clip shows a Greyhound bus. Caption, 1968, New York City. The bus drives along the highway into the city. Some passengers get off. Actor Robert Forster sits at a table in a diner.
Here in the Time magazine, I read about a guy who took a load of hippies, who were long-haired, strange-looking people, as you well know, put them on a bus and took them to Queens.
Hippie bus tour to Queens, 1968. The hippies are shown on the bus. A road sign points directions to Long Island and Jamaica. They get off the bus for refreshments and to do some sightseeing.
We took pictures of people mowing their lawns and washing their cars, and I took people to Howard Johnson's for ice cream and White Castle for, hamburgers, and they screamed, "We're being invaded, we're being invaded!"
Day and night, there were busloads of tourists from all over America, all over the world, coming through looking at the hippies in the village.
But to have freaks go to suburbia and take pictures of them, oh, we're being invaded!
I think that is the definition of great political art, is when it goes outside of the museum and affects people in their daily life.
If I had a show of my paintings and 1,000 people or 10,000 people came, well, that would be considered a great success. But if I'm capable of accessing the news and millions of people see it, well, there's a tremendous difference between 10,000 and 10 million.
Headline read, 60 hippies in a bus see sights of quaint Queens. A picture of them taking pictures is titled Photographing the Natives. Norman Savage, author, co-conspirator.
He was wilder in the 60s. His stuff was so raw and so fresh that it was like experimental jazz.
Pictures of Joey in his youth with long dark hair, lying back on a motorbike and walking in the middle of the street with his jacket slung over his shoulder. Peter Maloney, author, co-conspirator.
The war motivated everything we were doing. Even though what we were doing may not have been specifically about the war, underneath it was kind of a motor that kept us going. Whether you could call it anger or dissatisfaction or unhappiness, whatever it was inside us was making us make our art.
The war in Vietnam is going on, people are killing one another. What kind of God are we talking about here? And so I constructed a life-size sculpture of a dead and decayed figure on a crucifix.
Crucifixion, 1966-69. The cross is erected on the top of a hill. Another clip shows it being carried by a group of people.
I dragged it on my back.
up Fifth Avenue.
Into the Easter Day Parade.
Easter Parade, well-to-do people walking on Fifth Avenue in their most beautiful clothing.
When I got to the doors of St. Patrick's, the police locked the church doors, pushed the piece into me, kicked the piece, kicked me.
Kill him! Kill him! Kill him!
And I just dropped the sculpture and I ran down the block and jumped into a cab and got away. The police became the Roman soldiers. The crowd became the jeering crowd. And it was a total reenactment of over 2,000 years ago.
The East Village Other newspaper shows Joey on the hill with the crucifix and the headline, Calvary Again, Richard Wilde, School of Visual Arts.
He was at the right place at the right time, had the wish, the energy, and the love to explore it and push it.
The war in Vietnam dragged on, and I had to continue to protest against it. So I built a life-size Vietnamese village portraying a Vietnamese nativity, and I chose to do it on Christmas Day in Central Park.
Vietnamese Christmas Nativity Burning, 1968.
Got all of my friends with fake guns and helmets and whatever we could put together in an attempt to burn it to the ground.
A police patrol car drives towards them.
And of course, the cops found us. They were looking for me. Has anyone seen Joey Skaggs? I had a piece of paper. They even asked me, have you seen Joey Skaggs? I said, he was around here a minute ago. And then the New York Times does a story, hippies arrested for littering. Gee, they missed my intent. That's not what I was saying. That's not what I meant. I was doing something against the war in Vietnam.
Headline, cops invade hippie religious sex rights.
I watched how the media twisted and torqued the intent, content, meaning of the message to suit their own agenda. And I realized that the media has an amazing ability to mold public opinion. So I decided rather than just use the media to try to get attention for my work, I would use the media as part of my work, exploit their vulnerability, gullibility, necessity for being out there first, and incorporate this into a theatrical performance, and then see what happens.
Cat House for Dogs, 1976. Village Voice advert reads, Cat House for Dogs featuring a savoury selection of hot bitches from Pedigree Fifi the French Poodle to Mutts, Lady the Tramp, handler and vet on duty. Sudden photo service is available. No weirdos, please. Dogs only, by appointment.
Handler and vet on duty. Sudden photo service available. No weirdos, please. Dogs only, by appointment.
I can't believe that the Village Voice, for all its great reporting, fell for that one. That always makes me laugh.
It was, outrageous, but it was a sex story, and it was a dog story. The media likes to have, little kids and dog stories all the time. It has to be an animal. Boom! I put that out, and the phone rang off the hook. I got together a group of actors, a bunch of dogs, in a loft downtown Manhattan.
And created a theatrical performance for the press.
Okay, so what was going to be just the gag of having this ad appear turned out to be something you had to concoct because there was so much media interest
in it. But that's what I wanted. I wanted to do that. I was setting it up.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Alex Bennett. And tonight, Midnight Blue visits a cat house where all the females are real bitches.
Betty Drake and Blackberry. Isn't she beautiful? This meeting is to introduce the customers and their dogs to the brothel, to the bitches. And after they've chosen which bitch they wish their dog to mate with, we then inject the dogs with the drug which induces heat. And we have a second meeting then when they copulate.
And we had a really horny male dog that was there, and his mojo kicked in, and he was just humping space. He would hump anything. He'd just grab a head, he'd grab anything, and it looked like a dog orgy. I wrote letters to editors. I said, I've taken my dog, to the cat house, and he had a great time. I recommend this. Well, I've taken my dog there, and he was attacked by other dogs. I'm thinking about suing. I created a controversy.
I'm completely against it. Number one, I think you're going to be taking female dogs, causing them to go through false or silent non-ovulatory heats.
I created a second controversy in the cat house for dogs when I got so many calls from people wanting to have sex with dogs or wanting to watch women getting screwed by dogs. So I thought, well, here's an opportunity. I will create a diversion. so that people don't question the initial premise. So I sent out a second press release saying there is absolutely no animal-human contact happening in the cat house for dogs. And so that had, you know, the effect of making you not think, well, is there really a cat house for dogs? Because now you're thinking, people are having sex with dogs. Oh, my God.
So when ABC Television called me, they wanted to do a piece on the brothel for dogs.
So I provided WABC with an interview in Washington Square Park and a videotape of the Midnight Blue performance. And they did a documentary, which was nominated, and I later found out won the Emmy as Best News Broadcast for the inside of an animal cruelty story.
In the United States, there is a myth of the happy-go-lucky vagabond, the carefree mutt with no master and no leash, who comes and goes as he pleases and does whatever his nose tells him to do. This establishment in Greenwich Village is a cat house for dogs. By that, we do not mean a stud service. We mean a house of prostitution for dogs. For $50, your dog can have sex with a female dog while you watch and sip cocktails and take some pictures if you'd like to.
It was such an obvious idea to me. First of all, there are hundreds of thousands of dogs in the city. There's a dog population problem. People are willing to take their dogs to dog restaurants. I thought it'd be natural to get their dogs sexually gratified.
They got after me. The ASPCA, the Bureau of Animal Affairs, the NYPD Vice Squad, various religious and humane organizations, and I was subpoenaed by the Attorney General for legally running a whorehouse for dogs.
The subpoena issued to Joey is shown.
Today, at the State Attorney General's office, Skaggs and his attorney appeared in response to a subpoena.
And miraculously, the subpoena was for April 1st, April Fool's Day.
Joey unbuttons his white jacket. Underneath, he has a red shirt featuring Snoopy with the words April Fool written below.
He says the hoax was a conceptual art piece and an expensive one.
For what purpose?
Well, it says a lot about the media. I hope that it will change the viewing audience's opinion and change their perspective as to what media really is. There's a media reality. Television is not necessarily reality. And millions of people have spent weeks believing that there is a cat house for dogs. And in fact, there never was.
And that's what I did. I decided to have a relationship with the news media where they were not just reporting about me, but I was reporting about them as well. Their irresponsibility, their gullibility, their prejudices.
Buck Wolf, executive editor, Huffington Post.
Joey is the quality control inspector. He's poking for the soft spots in the media armor, and it turns out that it's very easy to find.
And in a culture like ours that's so media dominated, where commercial interests are just pushing their propaganda on us from every direction, the lesson he teaches, I believe, is, you know, be skeptical. Be double skeptical. Don't believe what you see.
And if I believe that, what else do I believe that's total bullshit?
Back in Kentucky, Joey's cutting the grass. Judy opens the gate at the end of the drive and lets herself in, along with the two border collies. Joey's now in the house, sitting in the lounge. One of the dogs settles down with him. In the garden, a model of a barn hangs from a branch of a tree and swings gently in the breeze.
Dennis, aloha, it's Joey Skaggs. Could you please give me a call back when you can? This is a guy that is leasing my property in Hawaii.
Joey takes out a bulging sack from the back of his car.
I just didn't want to give up what was, to me, the most important thing in my life, to be an artist, to be creative, to get up when I want to get up, sleep when I want to sleep, eat what I want to eat, and that's it. It's really, you know, you think it sounds easy. It's not easy. It's a very difficult thing to do, and you give up many things in doing that. But I couldn't live it any other way. I don't want to live it any other way.
Snow covers the grounds around the house. Joey has two female mannequins in swimwear standing under a gazebo.
And people always want to know what's next. You know, what have you done recently?
Shots of the tricycle painted matte grey with the Nerf gun fixed to the handlebar and the missile resting on two sawhorses in the garden. Norman Savage, author, co-conspirator.
You know, I could just, you know, sit back and wait and see, you know, what the next, you know, because he can't stop. So, yeah, if you've been doing it for a while, and it's the thing that you're really good at, I could, you know, why would you stop? What else would you do?
10,000 rural farmers were marching in the streets saying, down with Monsanto, because Monsanto donated 475 tons of seeds to Haiti after the earthquake to help them in their time of greatest need.
About 70% of grocery store food in the U.S. contains genetically modified organisms, or GMOs.
Biotech giant Monsanto, campaigners and environment.
Brief clips show the house and gardens in Kentucky on a rainy day. A horse pulls a cart laden with tobacco leaves. Joey stands outside, looking across at the fields nearby.
Why do you buy these GMOs? And they're resistant to Roundup, which we also make. Why don't you take that too? And they don't grow well in your country, they aren't really from your country. You devise the synthetic fertilizers to go along with those.
Right.
And they would lose their own seeds in the meantime. And they would lose part of their food sovereignty.
And the problem with it, of course, is like...
Joey drives past fields of crops. He then passes a row of large round metal silos. Later, back at home, he looks at images of crops on his laptop.
Epiphanies come in weird places at weird times.
Photographs of Joey at his house built on stilts in Hawaii. A view from the veranda looks out over the ocean.
I moved to Kauai because I was looking to get away from all the restrictions that I felt living in New York. I've lived there for decades, and I know the intimate underbelly stories of what's going on in Kauai.
Brief shots show an observatory, a tall chimney, a fast-flowing stream, a field of corn, a barrier across a road with a stop sign, palm trees lining a deserted road, a small office building, and a jet plane high in the blue sky.
Star Wars development, drone development, GMO cornfields.
Signs show the names of two companies involved in GMO products, Syngenta and Pioneer.
And Hawaii is just a microcosm of the real world. This is going on all around us. It's Pandora's box. You know, we've opened up all this technology. Who controls it? Who's making money from it? Are we going to be able to know what we're eating? Are they going to identify it?
The signage on a building reads, Monsanto, Food, Health, Hope. Shots of shelves in a supermarket filled with a wide variety of food products.
My intent is to bring attention to these issues because I know that no one's getting attention for the issues. Nobody cares.
A plane flies low above a field and sprays pesticide.
So how do you make people think and get upset and motivate them to take action? I do it by creating characters.
He visits a dental surgery. In the chair, the dentist covers his front teeth with a quick-drying rubber solution that makes an impression of his teeth.
There we go.
The mold is taken into a lab and used to make a set of dentures. Joey is trial fitted with a sharp pointed tooth. Then, more teeth are ground into shape.
We're going to do a fake news story. What's happening with GMOs, the positive and negative things of GMOs, and how we're now introducing different genes into humans. I'm trying to put together a little mini documentary about 10 minutes long so that I can either put it in a film festival or make a news story out of it, put it on YouTube, figure out some way I can have people have access to it.
99% of this is true. I am the only false part.
Joey returns to have the sharp pointed teeth fitted.
My character is a guy, whether I'm a marine biologist or a fisherman. I was in a motorcycle accident, broke my jaw in several places, knocked out my teeth,
and my geneticist scientist friend said, look, you know, we can try introducing shark stem cells in your jaw and see if we can regenerate teeth.
He checks out his new teeth in the mirror.
Oh, wow.
You have to tell a story.
Scary, man.
And that's the key. A good hoax promises a good story and visuals.
Metamorphosis, cockroach vitamin pill, 1981.
Our next guest on Live at 5 is a man with a mission. He is the head of a group called Metamorphosis, and he thinks that cockroaches are very important to all of us. Sue and I are delighted to welcome Dr. Joseph Gregor to Live at 5. Doctor, it's nice to have you with us. You have completed a rather exhaustive study, and in your words, the future of mankind lies in the cockroach.
So I went with this Panama hat, Panama suit, roach pins all over me, a cockroach t-shirt saying Metamorphosis.
I'm an entomologist. I've been doing research with roaches over the past 10 years, and I believe that roaches are the key to human survival.
He wore a white hat and a white suit. He looked as fraudulent as can be. And I told him, Joe, you can't get away with this. Who's going to believe it?
Actually, I brought a strand of super roach, which I have developed, which is actually impervious to all toxins known to man.
Well, those are big fellows in there.
Yes, they are.
And they're alive, Jack.
They he had these this really variety. Giant cockroach that he had gotten from the museum. When he took that out and he put it on the desk.
And I have developed a formula, which is a roach extract, which I have been taking along with my subjects for the past year. And colds, flus, virus have all but disappeared.
And you know, when you're there and the red light goes on in the camera, I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe they're falling for this.
The results have been incredible.
You remember the tape?
And so now I'm on the set.
Well, this is really our theme song.
And I had a little tape recorder with me.
I see.
And I was just going to, push the button.
Organization is called Metamorphosis. So. Okay, doctor, we probably ought to move along here.
I want to thank you
for sharing your scientific breakthrough with us here on Live at 5. Roaches, the future of mankind lies in these little devils right here.
I'm prepared for anything. You know, if they go, we got you, they got me. If they don't have me, I'm just going to take it to the next level.
Newspapers are filled with pictures and articles about Joey and the super roaches. Titles carrying the story include The New York Post, The Sun, The Chicago Tribune, and The Wall Street Journal.
With all the space given to the cockroach cure, isn't the American newspaper reader entitled to wonder what isn't getting in this space because this did?
Sometimes the facts are boring. People are more interested in the story than the facts, and that's what they want to exchange. People don't want to know the truth. They want to play with the story.
We're willing to believe in things that we want to believe in, even if we have a feeling they might not be true.
Why do the legal system without knowing the outcome beforehand? Let me tell you whether to sue or settle if you'll win or lose. I use non-traditional techniques to determine the outcome of legal decisions. Have you been the victim of a psychic injustice? Are you suffering from psychic surgery malpractice? Do you wish to renegotiate contracts made during past lives? There is no statute of limitations in the psychic realm. Let me use my psychic abilities to help you rectify injustices of the past and present. No fee unless I win your case. Call me.
808-UCLA.
Every Joey Skaggs story starts with some sort of unbelievable lie that people just want to believe in.
They wear commando-type berets and leather jackets the color of coal. They are the men and women of Walk Right. And their mission is to get you if you walk wrong.
I think a lot of marketers today are doing the same sort of things. They come there with live actors who are playing parts or dressed up in costume and getting the names of their brands out there. It's got much more of an impact than a billboard or an ad on TV.
If you look on Google and look for brand marketing, brand storytelling, brand narrative, you get gazillion hits. And everybody is trying to theorize on what that is. You know, Joey has done it.
Six Fat Squad commandos are here now, this morning, live,
to maintain tight security around our Good Morning America refrigerator while we talk to the leader and the founder, Joe Bones. That is his real name.
We are there to physically restrain them if necessary.
Stop them from going to the refrigerator?
You bet.
It was a nightmare. She really couldn't help herself. I had to hold her down.
So what's the significance of this chain?
Oh, you gotta lock the refrigerator sometimes.
The yes men, of course, are dealing with giant corporations and business and moving into the inside and trying to make changes.
Andy is about to tell a really big lie. They're gonna think that he represents one of the largest companies in the world.
I don't know if they would exist if it weren't for Joey, if you think about it, because he's laid the groundwork and everybody went, whoa, that's really cool. Maybe we could do something like that. And
I think that definitely gave me inspiration to realize that what I was doing with Improv Everywhere didn't just have to be a hobby.
Improv Everywhere's Frozen Grand Central, 2008.
I met Joey Skaggs August 1st, 1994. He was in the middle of an operation that he called Dog Meat Soup.
A strange letter is arriving in the mailboxes of animal shelters.
Animal shelters all across the country. A letter written in broken English asks if the shelters would be willing to sell unwanted dogs for use as food. According to the letter, the dogs would be bought for 10 cents a pound, then canned, and sold here and overseas.
It may sound outrageous, but Korean Americans concede it could be true. Someone who thought it up is very, very sick, so we want to get to the bottom of it. They are companions, they are protectors, they are pets, but they are never dinner.
Back at home, Joey tries on his shark teeth. With the leaves on the trees turning rusty brown, Joey takes a stroll around the garden.
Hey,
Joey. How are you, man?
How you doing?
I'm good. We arrive Friday night, and I've already scheduled a shoot in Keikaha.
Tom, aloha. Joey Skaggs here. How are you?
Actually, why don't you tell me when is a good time for you to get a bunch of people together who can talk about what's wrong with GMOs?
I need, you know, something to counter the GMO. I need conflict in this story.
I want to talk to you about a hoax.
I've been speaking to Will. He thought of an actress that might be good for my news commentator. I need a TV personality. It's not just a good voice. He has to keep a secret for about a year until the movie's up. There is no money involved. This is a low-budget flick. This is...
There is some time.
Well,
he is trying to get exposure.
Well, he'll get exposure. The crew is all coming. We're all coming to Kauai this... Friday, and I know it's a rather late notice, but I'm looking for an actor or an actress to play a principal role. All right, thanks. All right, bye. She has other clients, so, you know, and she's rehearsing for a play at 5:30 every day.
Well, if you direct me and coach me, I can try, but I don't know.
Judy Drozd, producer, collaborator.
Well, you're going to be, you know, with the production for the entire time. So, I mean,
you know, there.
You're there.
I saw a lot of problems.
I have to use what I have, you know. I have to make something out of clay, you know.
New York City, 2 weeks earlier, Joey pulls his van into a parking lot and pays the attendant.
I've got to get something out of it for you guys.
He unloads the missile-launching tricycle, then puts on a red and white Santa Claus outfit. He rides along a street busy with Christmas shoppers, holding a plaque that states, "Peace on Earth or else." Cars and trucks pass him as he slowly pedals along the city streets. Caption, Center's Mistletoe, at the United Nations, New York. Sarah Kit Farrell, actress.
Oh, what fun it is to ride in a fiery, burning way. Hey, jingle bells.
I learned about Joey because I did media studies at San Francisco State University, and it was literally just two or so weeks ago that I met him in a bar for a rehearsal to participate in this demonstration that was happening. And he asked me, could I dress up as an elf? and maybe sing some dirty Christmas carols. And so I thought, oh, this is cake. Have a couple in the bag.
There's a place that we all know, mostly shot in video. A place for sharing genitals by sticking them right through the walls. Oh,
and I think that's all it took, really. I think that that was how I won Joey over.
And maybe there's a way of changing those lyrics so that it has something to do with...
I'll think on it, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Joey.
Sarah, I hope it's not too late. Is it too late?
No, I still have my phone on.
I would love you to play a journalist doing a 60-minute, you know, kind of piece, or a 2020 kind of piece, profiling certain aspects of Kauai that aren't really known. But there's no money in this. I mean, you know, this is like, you know, this is just on a whim and a prayer. Everyone that's working with me is volunteering. If I can get your passage over there and put you up and buy your meals, is that okay? Oh, well, I'm...
I mean, are you kidding? This is art, this is life, this is something I believe in, this is, you know, I thought...
Fantastic.
Nashville International Airport, Nashville, Tennessee. Joey arrives at the airport and makes his way to the departures lounge. Richard Johnson, journalist, New York Post.
Well, I think that the mainstream media doesn't like the idea of this guy out there who's basically trying to damage them and expose them, and I think that probably the establishment is very much against him and probably would want to see him thrown in jail because he embarrasses these institutions.
Some of the stuff Joey's done is scary, and on top of that, you know, there are lots of authorities, political powers, people are going to sue you. The legal profession is industrialized as well, and they can take action against it.
Maintain visual contact with your personal property. Items unattended.
The plane takes off from Nashville. Joey waits by the baggage carousel. With his bag in his hand, he meets Sarah outside. Kauai, Hawaii. As the sun rises, Joey drives along a coast road with Sarah sitting in the back.
Is that the spot in Hanalei Bay where there's like that beautiful snorkeling, but then there's a really abrupt drop in the
reef? That's further out. That's where the surfers go. That's where the break is. We'll go out there. I windsurf from that spot to California, or so I said I did. And I had a band and a big farewell party and a Hawaiian blessing.
Footage from the 1983 windsurfing from Hawaii to California prank.
I had a stand-in double shaved to look like me.
A photo of Joey alongside his double.
Keller bust.
Yeah.
A clip shows people gathered on the beach and in the shallow water watching the windsurfer sailing out to sea.
He made it around and came back to shore, and we met at the bar and were having a laugh, and everyone believed that I took off for California on a windsurfing, the longest, you know, windsurfing expedition ever.
29-year-old Jay Skaggs shoved off for California today. That's no big deal, except for Skaggs is trying to make the 2,500-mile journey on a windsurfer.
And the local media here got really bent out of shape. The journalists didn't appreciate.
They continue with their journey around the island, passing a jagged mountain range, a small development of single-story homes alongside the highway. Eventually, they drive up a narrow dirt track to Joey's friend's house. He hugs a grey-haired man with a beard. Caption follows, meeting of GMO-free Kauai activists.
Welcome home.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Thank you all for coming. Thank you for having us. What I'm trying to do is create a story that has an element of plausibility and yet has a lie in it. So all of you are speaking your truth, but you are taking part in a prank.
I'm just trying to get anti-GMO, pro-GMO, but my piece really is about how science controls inventions and patents, how the corporations own it.
I want a strong opinion from your side. I want a strong opinion from the other side. I'm not making up my mind.
I want to
present opinions.
Okay, speed all around. And Sarah, go.
I'm here with members of a local organization called GMO Free Kauai.
I'm standing here with Ed Call, a college professor and activist here in Kauai.
It's a fallacy that science belongs to these chemical companies.
This is giant corporations specifically own those seeds and patent them.
People became concerned that all this information, they could use it for purposes that are not necessarily in the public good.
In a fishing village, you always take only what you need, and if there's any extra, you share.
They talk about the corn or the corn spray. What about what the sugar used to spray? They used to spray. Who knows what they used to spray?
Long term, nobody has the wisdom to conduct this thing safely.
Kauai Medical Center.
I'm here with Drs. Ng and Croft, who are overseeing some of the research being done on Joe Howard in terms of his tooth regeneration.
They regenerate. I lose them constantly, but they're teeth right behind.
I see that.
And they just keep coming forward.
I kind of see Joey as this conductor of this orchestra of chaos. I mean, this is unlike any symphony that has ever been heard.
We cover every walk of life. Doctors, Joe Lissol, voice figures, politicians.
Celebrity Sperm Bank Auction, 1976.
We're going to try to get rid of anybody that happens to their liking. Anybody that doesn't scratch his day
off. In 1976, I had a celebrity sperm auction.
Unfortunately, last night, celebrity sperm was broken into, and celebrity sperm was stolen.
It was right here. Everything was totally staged.
Whose sperm did you want?
Dylan.
Dylan?
Yeah, this man here.
I decided Bob Dylan. So I dressed like Bob Dylan, and I went there looking for Bob Dylan's sperm.
There was nothing there. It was a friend's apartment. So I kept them out by saying, oh, sperm's been stolen. Auction's canceled.
I want to introduce Sunshine. Sunshine is an artificially inseminated child. She was told that she was artificially inseminated.
Well, my task was to appear in videos protesting Joey's celebrity sperm bank, to be a believable lawyer.
She's been looking for her father. She has been on the verge of catatonia.
I don't remember any rehearsal. I met the young woman who was playing my client. I might have had a conversation with her about the circumstances.
It was really an improv. It was really like Second City. It was, everybody had their own part, and that was all they were told.
I want to know about this, because it's very dangerous what's going down here. Very dangerous.
He controlled things from a distance, but he let the actors, he really let them have their way with the script. There was no script. There was never a script.
I'm trying to, you know, what's the best way of looking at this? You can turn to the camera and say, we're about to examine.
We're about to, or we already have?
No, we're about to, I guess. That'd be nice. We're about to examine.
My only thing is that we've got better questions to ask if they've already had the examination. I'm here with Drs. Ng and Croft, two of the professionals who are overseeing some of the research being done on Joe Howard, specifically in terms of his tooth regeneration that's going on. I'm sorry, you guys. I am out of...
That wasn't
I need to do... This is like out of nowhere to me, and I don't know what I'm talking about.
That's the way that was. That
oh,
was,
well, it was, but I figured... I thought that this wasn't the first time. Is this the first time you're ever going to see him?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, that's what I thought.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm losing it. What do you want? Any other...
Coming right from the beginning again?
Mm-hmm.
Larry Croft, PhD.
Well, I was hoping to be the scientific advisor.
And so I started thinking all sorts of elaborate ideas about, and Joey told me what the basic idea was, that there was shark teeth, the guy had grown teeth, So I started thinking, what's the most plausible way of explaining that scientifically? And I came up with some nice scientific papers. Yeah, this is possible. Yeah, it's kind of on the edge of plausibility. It's a bit wacky, but, you know, it'll probably pass. Then when I told him in Hawaii, this is what the process is, he was horrified. It was just, it wasn't silly enough. We use sharks as a source of sustainable and renewable stem cells.
Stop for 1 second. Do me a favor.
Yeah.
Lie. You're too honest.
I'm lying, Adam. I'm lying my ass off.
I know you're lying, but here's the lie that I think.
Yeah.
Larry, don't mess with your hair, please.
The lie is, if we can regenerate our teeth like a shark can regenerate our teeth, then we can revolutionize the whole dental industry.
Yep.
And the point of what we're trying to do is to make it so that humans can now regenerate teeth. That's it.
Forever.
That's what it's about. Okay. But the shark, I mean, it's the ability to regenerate teeth constantly.
Okay.
You're doing a good job. Trust me, you are. Dr. Croft, talk to me about the addition of shark stem cells in your research.
The teeth regrow in sharks, and once a tooth falls out, another one grows back. So if we could harness the ability that sharks have to regrow their own teeth, we could do the same thing in humans. And so this would revolutionise the dental industry, and it would be a fantastic thing for many people. Sorry.
There's such a thin line between, you know, what's plausible and what's like, get out of here, I don't believe any of this.
Yeah.
Is it too much ham? We'll see. We'll see.
Joey and Larry sit together in silence on the couch, both deep in thought. Comma Cocoon, 1990.
Comma Cocoon, may I help you? Yes. Yes, you got our press release? Mm-hmm. And what kind of vacation were you looking for?
A brochure offers your dream vacation. Shot show Joey attending to a man on a bed out by palm trees around a beach in a secluded blue water cove. Joey wears a white shirt, Bermuda shorts, and a stethoscope around his neck. He places a cocktail umbrella into an intravenous drip.
Now there is Comma Cocoon. And with recent technological advancements made in the field of anesthesiology, we can now knock you out. They'll hypnotize you and give you, a computer-generated dream.
You could be a rock star, you could, be Don Juan. You could do your own personal fantasy. And we could give you a tan while you were out, you'd quit smoking, minor surgeries.
The Comma Cocoon brochure reads, arrive as a caterpillar, leave as a butterfly.
I always try to do something that's challenging to me. I don't want to do the same thing. And I thought, why don't I try to do two hoaxes at once?
Dressed as a surgeon, Joey holds up a large kitchen knife. The headline on the advert reads, Hair Today Limited, seek scalp donors.
Depending on the condition of your scalp, no scars or birthmarks, a full head of hair, if you were in a high-risk profession, I would give you X amount of $1,000, and upon your untimely demise, I had the ownership of your scalp.
Hair Today Limited, 1990.
On this side of the room, I'm Dr. Shenango. I'm curing baldness. On this side of the room, I'm Dr. Schlaffer, giving sleep dream vacations.
Headline, World of Sleep Therapy Awaits Brave Traveler.
And then when the time was right, I revealed that it was a hoax, and the New York Times, Mark Deary, did a wonderful piece.
Headlines, The Merry Prankster and the Art of the Hoax. Dream vacation can't cure baldness.
There's a gray area. There's a time when you do the performance, and it's going out there. And then when you do the expose, and you think it's over. Well, there are people who don't ever get the expose. So I get a phone call from an Italian journalist, Dr. Schlaffer. So I go, hello, my name is Sylvia Kramer. I work for El Giornale. I'd like to do a story about your operation. I said, well, look, come to my home and I'll tell you a story, that you'll really enjoy. I was going to tell her the truth. She calls me back 10 minutes later. Dr. Schlaffer, I'm running late. I said, fine, no problem. And she calls me again. I'm running late. Then finally, the last time she calls, she says, Dr. Schlaffer, I'm sorry, but I can't make it. Can we do the interview on the phone? Lazy bitch, you know, I was going to tell you the truth, but, you know, I'm not going to tell you the truth. I'm just going to continue the hoax.
Il Giornale runs the feature. The translation of the headline reads, an American clinic offers at reasonable rates extra-long restorative anesthesia. This weekend, I'm having a golden dream coma.
After it hits the Italian news media, I get a phone call from the competition. Joey, you screwed Sylvia Kramer. We almost fell for the story too, but we read it in the New York Times.
Translation of headline. An American prankster has declared war on the news media. The weekend golden dream coma is a fake.
You think you know when it's over, and it's not over. It's not over. Because the truth is really the hardest thing to get to.
Okay, so what do you think of this?
I would make the conflict between morality and science up front, more up front, and then get into, but open sourcing science has its own issues, you know. I have to think about this, because this...
Yep. The operations and implications of this research and its open source methodology.
Is this a news report?
It was.
So maybe we don't even need that?
That's what I'm thinking. I think that this intro is so specific.
Yeah.
Taking you directly into something that, I mean, that's what we thought it was earlier.
Right.
There's a great big difference between doing what I do, which is a prank, and doing a film. I have to be improvisational. I have to go with the flow. So whatever it is, I've got to be able to make it happen. And so it's different than a film. You have a script, you know, you have the actors, you're paying these people, you know, it's all lit, takes hours, and the improvisational theater, guerrilla theater, culture jamming, hoaxes, different ballgame. So.
I'm having a difficult time seeing if that's where we're going to end up. I don't have a lot of clarity yet if this is going to be a documentary or a news report.
We still don't have a timeline on this thing, you know. It's still in a nonlinear form, and we still haven't figured out where the actual punches are going to be thrown yet.
Joey makes a call on his mobile phone.
Warren.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? I'm going to say this now to you personally, so I'd rather be in person. But this is all about, you know, high tech and experiments with genetics and gene splicing and all that. Are you a willing guy to talk about the possibility or the hopefulness of having reconnective nerve tissue done through stem cell research?
Clip show gentle waves washing up on a sandy beach. Wheelchair user Warren arrives at the house. Surfers paddle out into the blue sea on their boards. Joey and Sarah help Warren into the house.
Warren, who broke his back in a horrible accident in the ocean, and he has spinal cord damage, he comes in, and he's the savior for the piece because he takes the attention away from my shark teeth.
Fake group of open source science philanthropists.
I want everyone to have a piece to say, especially Warren. And he says, at the table,
if stem cell research can make it possible for someone who has been in a wheelchair for 20 years to be able to stand up and walk to the bathroom, I can't tell you how wonderful that would be.
Warren carries that whole conversation. It's all about that. Forget about the ethics of doing the research. I need it.
This is heartfelt and the truth. This particular hoax for me is personal. It's not just Joey's art.
He's brought a lot of friends together
who have heartfelt thoughts on these subjects that originally were just the setup. Now they're the topic.
Now, to me, it's more plausible. And I have to have an element of plausibility. I mean, it's so fucking far out anyway. But, you know, now it's concealed. They've got it. And we convince them in the next 10 or 15 minutes to accept it and move on and see the bigger picture. We got it.
This particular piece really is a stand-by-itself piece. You know, whatever the length it ends up being, if it's a half an hour, you know, great. It's really a show. And we never have to reveal the fact that it's a hoax. And we're going to make this into its own film and then put this out in the world.
We submit it to film festivals as a mini documentary. If they air it, if they accept it and air it, and no one says that it's, you know, bullshit, fantastic.
Trailer for the hoax documentary Pandora's Hope. Hawaii's island of Kauai is many things to many people, but there's a Kauai most people don't get to see.
Tourists don't know anything. To them, it's a beautiful, idyllic tropical island.
It's also the most remote geographical archipelago on Earth.
We have a secret military base doing underwater research with a submarine base out here. There may or may not be nuclear weapons.
Clips from the hoax documentary show the signs for GMO companies Syngenta and Pioneer.
It's a fallacy that science belongs to these chemical companies. The science belongs to all of us.
I try not to think of any ethical ramifications. It's not often you see shark's teeth in a human, but, you know, they're functioning perfectly.
Open source science can make it possible for someone who has been in a wheelchair to be able to stand up. I can't tell you how wonderful that would be. I would say go ahead and play God.
This is a huge Pandora's box. Nobody has the wisdom to conduct this thing safely.
The closing credits for Pandora's Hope are screened. Back in Kentucky, the following text appears. Months later, Sarah, posing as producer-director Kit Farrell, is submitting Pandora's Hope to film festivals around the world. Meanwhile, anti-GMO sentiments are heating up in the US.
Hey, there you are.
Hey.
Can you see me?
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Your hair is longer. Looks good.
Yeah. I imagine your beard is probably longer too, but right now it's top frame. I've got a little bad news.
Yeah.
Holly Shorts got back to us.
Uh-huh.
And they did not accept Pandora's Hope.
That's okay.
So they sent consolation saying that it was a record year. They had 1,400 submissions. So one more down.
Right. That's why it's a shotgun approach. You know, we do a whole lot and, you know, it's the odds.
Yeah.
It's just a waiting game, Sarah. You know, I said to everyone when I did the hoax part is the easy part, and the hard part is waiting to see if anybody, you know, bites.
There's no pee.
Oh,
right. He's not here. They pick a lot of films, but we're not one of them. Oh, well.
A list shows submissions that have been rejected.
The big one I'm hoping for is the Hawaii Film Festival. That's the one I hope we make it into.
That's when the shit will really hit the fan. Because everyone is going to realize who these people are, you know, and the local press will go bananas. It'll probably go wire service, AP, mm-hmm. which will then make it a global story.
Maybe we can make it a newsworthy event and get some media coverage that way. I'm just concerned that our friends will laugh their asses off and then it's all over.
Right.
We've come this far and we really don't want to blow it at, you know, at this stage. All we have to do is get these film festivals covered.
At home, Joey dances around a pool table while playing a game with a friend. He takes a shot and follows the white ball as it rolls up the table.
Hello? Hello? Can you hear me? Hello? Sarah, hi. We heard from the Hawaii International Film Festival. To you.
Joey sits down next to the dog.
What do you say about that? Huh?
Okay. He's now out in the garden cutting the grass.
It's just a difficult challenge. And I'm so far, disappointed because I haven't been accepted at the film festival, but I can understand that because it's not that it's a fantastic film. It's, a bunch of people talking about serious issues, which could be made, I guess, into a great film by a great filmmaker, but I don't consider myself a filmmaker. I feel like I kind of locked myself into a corner, trying to do a very difficult thing, limiting how I can get attention to the piece by only having it available to film festivals.
Judy Drozd, producer collaborator.
I've rarely heard him say, that was a mistake. I wish I hadn't done that. If I could do it over, I would do it this way. I think he really has a lot of self-confidence. He trusts his instincts. And he knows that he can pull a rabbit out of a hat if he needs to, and I've seen him do it. He enter into a project because of very strong beliefs about it, even if they are conflicted beliefs or if there's no way to know the actual truth or the actual outcome of what's going to happen. As long as you're excited and fascinated and curious and you're alive, you're really living, and he's really living. He's often described it as being a surfer. You have no idea if you're going to catch the wave. You have no idea once you're on the wave how long you're going to stay on the wave, and you don't know when your ride is over. And for him, that's hugely exciting.
Have you ever pulled something that's failed?
No.
No?
No.
Really? Is it that easy? Is there any kind of surefire thing you can do?
It's like producing a theater piece. You can see, write, produce, direct, stage, act in it. It's very complicated. There are many techniques to gaining access to the media. If you know how the media works, it's kind of easy to give him the hook.
I know that he will never stop being creative, doing projects, coming up with outrageous, outlandish, hilarious ideas. I know he won't. It's just his nature. It's what he'll do.
You never know what he's going to come up with next. You never know where he's going, but I'm going with him. I'm going to be there when, every time he calls. Even at this age, I'm going to follow him through the streets of New York. It's okay because I know wherever he's going, it's going to be fun.
And we were leaving one of the houses recently and he said, I'm so lucky. I'm so, so lucky that all of my friends are here doing this for me. Like, it doesn't escape me for a second how grateful I am. And then he looked at me in the rearview mirror and said, and you're one of my new friends.
I've been really lucky that I've been able to live the life that I've lived and with the people that have come into my life and to feel a part that we've all created something, because it's just not all me. It's me involving everyone I can involve and everyone doing it. And that I love. That's the we, it's not the me.
Joey's out walking in the garden with the dogs. The sunlight beams through the branches high up in the trees. Sarah video messages him.
Good morning. Good morning. It's August 22nd, and in the past 12 hours or so, we've been accepted to two film festivals. I got the first email last night, right before I drifted off to sleep. I was pretty excited. And then this morning, I wake up, and what do you know? We're accepted to another film festival. Two!
Hi!
Hi!
We did it!
We did it!
Yeah!
Now the fun part begins. Now it's going to be the juice.
Heading to the Moondance International Film Festival, Joey pulls onto the highway.
We'll take... plan for today is we're going to poster the town.
Okay, please, if you'd like.
Mystic River Press.
Cheryl, I'm a filmmaker who has a film here in the film festival. It's a short film, it's just 20 minutes. Let's stop by the cinemas to see if our big movie poster's up.
Yeah.
There it is! Judy photographs Sarah next to the Pandora's Hope poster.
Hey everybody, right now, Kit Farrell from Pandora's Hope joins us right now. Tell us about this wonderful movie.
Oh, I'm so excited about this, my debut project.
The film is played in the cinema.
Things that you can only read about in Discover magazine or something. It's not often you see shark's teeth in a human, but, you know, they're functioning perfectly.
Heading to the New Filmmakers New York Film Festival, an article on the internet carries the headline, New Film Asks Hawaiian Paradise or Island of Dr. Moreau? Kauai, where science and nature collide. Text 2 hours before the screening.
I was wondering, do we push this to like go up there and serve wine?
With a tea.
To me, it's another level of absurdity that I can't stop myself from wanting to do.
Joey takes a taxi to the screening.
People might find it odd that you're using the stem cells of a different species for your research in humans.
I had no idea that the teeth would regenerate so quickly. Every test that I did on them was, 100% normal. It was as if Joe was born with those teeth.
I'm Kit Farrell.
That group was basically to make it more transparent, as they say.
The man with the shark teeth. I'm just curious, why do the teeth regenerate?
So this is a xenotransplantation, which I have come to find is actually not that uncommon. It has to do with stem cells.
The film's content quickly starts to appear in news reports and on the internet. In a clip, Joey opens his mouth to reveal two rows of sharp pointed teeth.
My stories may take off and be an instant, everyone has to read it, or they may be a slow in the back burner, takes time before this will come around. And I have to have the openness, the flexibility to let that happen.
A copy of an email accepting Pandora's Hope to a festival.
I have planted seeds of thought. And seeds of thought, hopefully, will grow.
Filming is underway for Kit Farrell's scientific thriller. The article asks Sarah, at what stage is this film project now?
Pandora's Hope is now a film. So it has a life. It's not a newspaper article that is yesterday's news buried and gone.
Joey?
Yes, yes.
I'm actually calling to tell you that our film, Pandora's Hope, has just been accepted into the Big Apple.
You're kidding.
That's fabulous.
In my heart, I've always been the person who is disturbed by things, wants to see it changed, and looks for a way in which to reach people to ring the bell to make those changes.
I'm going to send out the press release with a flyer announcing Pandora's Hope in the film festival in New York to the news media and generate some buzz about the film.
Joey's mother helps with the mail out.
Is it possible for you to get some friends to be protesters and protest the movie because there's animal stem cells being used in humans? We're going to have a demonstration against the movie, so I'm planning on that. I'm getting protest signs printed up now. Franken food, Franken people, Frankenstein. Just don't, you know, tell anybody that it's a hoax. Okay. All right, okay. All right, man, because I've got like 2 years worth of my life in this thing. Bye.
Joey sticks address labels to envelopes while his mother writes across the table from him. A flyer blows along a street at night. The brightly illuminated sign outside the cinema announces the 10th annual Big Apple Film Festival, November 6th to the 10th. Joey liaises with a group of protesters across the street. The protesters hold up their placards. Joey joins them, holding up a sign across his chest. He chats and laughs with one of the protesters.
I don't remember if I told you about my first grade teacher, Ms. Davis, who said to the class, I want you all to think about something. Just open your minds. I'm going to tell you about a big picture. She started out telling the class, oh, let's, you know, look at under a microscope. And we see this little amoeba. And then, you know, the amoeba grows and we have, you know, bigger life. And we grow and now we have people. But people are really, you know, just a grain of sand on a beach. And she said, just imagine all the beaches in the world, and then planets and galaxies in a big universe. And it goes on and on and on and on. And she just kept getting the picture bigger and bigger. I felt really frightened. I just, you know, I lost my grasp of reality, where I was, my place in the universe. And I realized how insignificant I was.
The audience sit and watch the Pandora's Hope movie, displaying a mix of emotions. A woman holds her hand over her mouth, while another laughs. Others sit watching, deep in concentration. Text reads, multitudes of people have screened Pandora's Hope at film festivals and on the internet. No one has challenged its credibility. To date, this film's the only proof that the whole thing is a hoax. Ever the trickster, Joey carries on leading his band of co-conspirators.
Well, that's it. That's our evening at a cat house for dogs, and it is for real, and it is run by Mr. Joseph Skaggs. No kidding around. This is it, right?
Satisfaction guaranteed.
Satisfaction guaranteed.
After the prank, during the closing credits, two more clips are shown.
get you a live shot. This is a protest, according to at least one press release, organized by an artist named Joey Skaggs. He has led this band of outraged consumers dressed as Muppets down to Goldman on West Street. He's also peddling what they're calling his mobile homeless homes prototype. It's what they're calling a low-cost alternative living space for the millions of underwater or foreclosed homeowners in this country. But Goldman clearly is not done hearing about Muppets.
Is this the last of your hoaxes?
Oh, sure.
He smiles. The end.